round letters transformed into share letters. Okay. So on days like this, or in retreats, one aspect is that we, especially if we have been a little bit around practicing, we are revisiting tools, we are engaging in certain practices, and we are introducing or getting introduced new tools, new practices, different. And what could say that maybe one way of defining different tools, different practices, which will work not all the time and not for everyone, but they are all different gateways, different entry points to the profound, you know, to the profound mystery of being human, yeah, being born into this particular expression of life. Introducing different gateways, different entry points. And today, during this day, I really emphasized grounding and embodiment. And of course, they're very important. It's not the whole of the path. it's an aspect of the path. Really important, really, 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 really helpful. You know, because also from the sense of grounding, of embodiment, what we can also access easier than, one way what to access is a calm, this calm ability to become more and more present, to be more and more present, aware of what is happening in our experience, without being basically swept away, overwhelmed, where we think we have to, you know, abandon ourselves. This is my gesture for spinning out. Don't spin out. Or that when we spin out, that we have tools actually to come back. Because we have to be here to discover. So different tools, different practices, they will emphasize different qualities, they will support different qualities. Sometimes you might engage with the teachings through, you know, so these kind of practices, sometimes more emphasizing the calming quality. We can engage with the teaching through insight practices, you know, emptiness practices, through engagement with ethics, you know, really making this as an entry point, this quality, this intention of non-harming, through the cultivation of these innate qualities of the heart, you know, like loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, generosity, gratitude, and so forth. So all these different aspects, all important, really all very important. And sometimes, you know, it can be confusing, like what should I do? What shall I choose? And I think really to trust and also to discover for your own, in your own exploration, that actually they are all connected. They all will support each other. You know, they all actually will fertilize the ground for a lot of other, you know, things. You know, when we, for example, engage in calming practices, or like today in this quality of grounding, embodiment, they will fertilize, they will impact, they will support also the other aspects. Yeah, and it can be confusing at times, you know. Especially if we approach the practice in a way which makes really this very clear distinction between, let's say, calming samadhi practices and more cultivation of heart qualities like loving kindness, compassion. You know, it's like, oh, how does it fit? But actually, when we are sitting down, we will discover for ourselves that they really are still connected, that support each other. And I just really want to mention this. You know, so if it's confusing, I can understand. and also trust that you are not getting thrown disconnected bits at you. Yeah. But different starting points that will explore different areas, different levels of the teachings. You know, because again, something which I continue to discover, you know, that the Dharma, the teaching, are so multi-layered, so beautiful, so rich with discovery. You know, and they can take us deeper and deeper. And in our practices, you know, again, with whoever you are sitting, maybe a day or a retreat, you will be entering a landscape, a territory from different directions, maybe, and sometimes even with a different mapping. Yeah, you know, and this is something I experience a lot. You know, one of the main things I'm doing in the last 2.5-3 years is supporting people on long-term retreat. You know, sometimes the mapping is even different, but how can we explore this territory of the human potential, of this potential of really perceiving self, other, the world radically differently in ways that open up, that are liberating and freeing. So we have the different tools, and again, something I just really want to mention, you know, also depending on depending on the tools, but also depending on how we approach, perceive our practice will fundamentally shape and influence how our practice will unfold. You know, and again, not saying now you have to approach your practice in a particular way, but to keep this in mind, you know, this is all part of, again, of a co-arising. And you might have seen this today, even, you know, when you look back or right now, that's the very attitude right now you're bringing toward to your practice, to what you are actually doing here. How you interpret it, how you see it in a bigger context, will actually shape what will unfold, reveal or hide itself. Yeah. So I spoke at the beginning, like how all we as participants are co-creating this day together, you know, that's not something which is like delivered, ready-made, you know, and you just are passive recipients. But also, there is also a constant participation in our practice, moment by moment, that will shape it, that will influence what we will, how it reveals. You know, our assumptions, our expectations, our perceived limits. I can't still my mind, or whatever it might be, for me, practice is about X, Y, and Z. That's what it is about. It's not about that. You know, our definition, what our practice is about, all this will be part of the territory we are entering. And some of our assumptions, or actually most of our assumptions, especially if where they're operating unconsciously, they will limit us and blind us, even if something is arising in our experience. You know, sometimes we don't see it. You know, sometimes you need another to point it out. I'm so egoistic. Oh, actually, right now I feel there's a lot of compassion. Oops. You know, this is a very coarse example, but you see what I'm pointing to. And our assumption will also prod us on, will encourage us. You know, they will, you know, hold us back, but also support us to take a step further. You know, and I just really want to brings this in, you know, it's so complex, so rich, and it's so fascinating. I find this so utterly fascinating. And part of practice, I think part of practice is becoming more and more conscious about this, you know, about this, I don't want to say structures, but I can't think of a better word, about these structures, about, you know, how we limit, how we open up, you know. Part of our praxis is to become conscious about it. This is the most important first step. And also about widening our territory, how we can perceive and conceive of self, other worlds, this very experience. And we will be challenged in this, you know, because again, you know, sometimes we come to these points where actually, you know, we have to challenge our assumptions, our beliefs. Especially it can become challenging when we enter new territory, when we suddenly arise in a way we don't know about ourselves. We don't know ourselves in, where we don't have a blueprint. When this, what we comfortably call, this is how I am, suddenly expands into something which actually doesn't fit the self image. So like, oops. Again, I'm aware that much more can be said about it. But I just really want to bring this in. And very supportive, again, one another quality which is so important in practice is an increasing ability to fixate less, to become more sensitive, to become more receptive to actually what is happening. You know, so often when I speak with someone in a one-to-one, someone might say, this is like this and like this and like this, and I just might come that, really? Really? And then there is this moment of stopping, of sensing, and then, oh, no, actually not. This is actually what is here, yeah? And again, one, how this quality of fixating less can be named and can be expressing itself, that we learn to hold less and less tightly, more and more lightly, of dear held assumptions and beliefs about ourselves, world, and the rest. And this, you know, this quality of holding less, and maybe it's a little bit clunky, but I think it could also be one of the expressions of what you will hear again and again and again in the teachings when you stick around, is the importance of the ability to let go. You know, letting go. I remember years ago I heard this talk by a teacher that one could say the practice is about letting go. And of course, you know, there is the important question, what does it actually mean? What does it actually mean to let go? Again, we can have a lot of assumptions about what it means to let go. And where we have to let go, as if it works like this. Yeah. Does it, you know, can be a really interesting question. Does it mean what it is? Yeah. But leaving this aside, you know, just want to make a small connection, just make a small connection. You might ask now yourself, what does all this grounding and embodiment and so forth, this relaxation, so this is also very much something I emphasize today, relaxing, releasing, relinquishing, knowing the support, what has to do with letting go? You know, knowing the ground. Yeah. And of course, one could say in the relaxing, releasing, there is a letting go already inherently. But what we also actually might sense maybe already, that with it there comes a quality of more calm, more sense of well-being, more a sense of steadiness. Yeah, there is a quietening down of our pretty much around tendency to either crave for something or to dislike something, of aversion and craving. This is already calmed down to some extent, maybe to a bigger extent. So through the sense of well-being, of steadiness, this is an expression actually of well-being and steadiness, that this is already less around. And when there is a sense of well-being, a steadiness, decreasing of the constant pull, of push and pull, it's actually much easier to let go further. This will support our ability to actually relinquish, to release. We cannot let go. We cannot let go if there is a sense of tightness, of insufficiency, of stress, a quality of fluidity, of flexibility, of responsive receptivity, of letting go, of releasing, cannot arise when there is a contraction of fear, lack of confidence, judgment, harshness, self-criticism, and so forth. Yeah, cannot arise. So to actually ask yourself, I have to let go of this fear, is a pretty unmanageable task when you're in the fear. It's impossible. You're like, so what we need is then to actually see to whatever extent can we bring in a quality of spaciousness around it, of fluidity, of openness, of softness. This is the first task. Yeah? And of course, there are so many qualities. You know, this is, one could say, where the cultivation aspect, again, I'm going now a particular trajectory and I'm leaving a lot out. I'm really aware of it. But we could say this is where the whole cultivation aspect comes into our practice, into the practice of letting go, of relinquishing, of flexibility. Yeah. You know, these qualities of the heart, which will support this sense, will to some degree support a sense of opening, of softening, of spaciousness, of well-being. And this is again where the cultivation of qualities like loving kindness, compassion, generosity, gratitude, joy play such an important role. Not to underestimate this. You know, they bring a lightness of touch to a situation. They're so beautiful and empowering, these qualities. Yeah. And we can, you know, there are so many ways we can nourish, fertilize, evoke, and invite them into our being. And what we discover actually, you know, that when these qualities arise, these heart qualities of compassion, kindness, joy, contentment, they always bring with them a sense of well-being. They feel good. Actually feel good. You know, when you remember a moment, maybe today or in the last week, when there was a quality of kindness in your being, or generosity, or gratitude, can you bring up more? How did this feel? Good, isn't it? So it feels good. It feels good to be kind, generous, grateful, appreciative. You know, we love to feel these qualities. We love to inhabit these qualities. We love our being to be imbued by these qualities. And interesting also, like just as an aside, when we feel into them, they're actually all relational qualities. They actually all have with them a sense of connecting, of relating. When they are around, again, I'm just throwing this out, you know, just see if it resonates with you, though they feel good, they feel good. There is, they have a relation and quality. Their very presence, again, will impure a situation, one could say, with some quality of beauty, with some quality of depth, of meaning. So what I'm pointing to really my is that one could say, you know, and this can so easily come into our practice, you know, from our many of our cultural backgrounds will support them. So rather they become a should, you know, I should be kind, compassionate, you know, actually what we see, rather than they becoming a moral obligation, we have to, you know, fit the gold standards of, because we have to be seen as good. Actually, they are qualities which are freeing, they are nourishing, they are beautiful in themselves. And why wouldn't we want to cultivate them? It's a different field. Why wouldn't we do it? It would be stupid. Yeah? And we know this, actually we all know it. Whenever I will ask a group of people, how does it feel to be kind, people will say invariably, there is an opening, there is a softening, it feels good. And still we can make this very beautiful liberating quality still something, you know, to beat ourselves up with. You know, when it becomes a social pressure to be kind, to be kind. So hopefully, increasingly in our practice, what actually supports the quality or the motivation, the love for the cultivation is not a should, but a recognition that they actually have a liberating quality, that they are actually, you know, in ever increasing degrees, you know, in expressions of freedom, of wisdom. And again, with them, what they also will bring is some sense of beauty, of depth, of meaning and purpose. And I think when we are entering this territory, you know, this potential of our humanness, to really even have the sense to allow ourselves to tread gently here. These are matters of the heart, you know, of the beauty of the heart. And what it doesn't need, what doesn't help, is a slave driver. Or what would be another, like a general. Like, oh. Not the right quality. So again, rather than perceive them as ways we should be, seeing them as actually a right we have to be, our joyful duty to be, yeah? You know, we could also see them as really, really, really helpful ingredients of this art of meditation, of inner exploration. Because also one could say, but that's what we are, also one could see what we are engaging with. It's an art we are engaging with. It's an art, not a project of self-improvement. Yeah, it's too limiting, much too limiting. And it doesn't actually honor our potential of depth. So and again, it's not what we emphasize today. Yes, there are practices where we develop the skill, the art of calming, where we are developing the skill of inviting, invoking qualities like kindness, compassion, and so forth. And they are always very, again, so, so helpful to keep in mind. It's skills we are developing. It's not that we are, you know, that this is part of our makeup or not. You know, it's skills we can develop. And we all can develop them. And you may have heard, you know, which I think, again, it's such a beautiful and at times really challenging expression, you know, of a deeper understanding. You know, you might have read something like, actually, that's the unobstructed, kind and compassionate heart, you know, has actually these qualities as its natural foundations. So whenever we check and notice, we could say that these qualities are not around. I can't access them very easily right now. One could say, oh, my heart is obstructed. I think this is really lovely, rather than I have to go and get something in, you know. Oh, my heart is obstructed. So against maybe the belief or the assumption that we have to add now something which is not enough here, we actually have to make place for it to arise. And I think this is, again, can be such a beautiful shift to actually really contemplate this. Oh, what is preventing my heart right now to be kind? Rather than be kind. Or you should be kind. What is preventing my heart right now to be kind? And again, if we see this this as a quality, we can discover, you know, a territory of our inner landscape, of our potential, which we can strengthen, unveil, make more and more accessible. You know, what probably is also part of it is that we question our very, very often very limiting ideas how the expression of these qualities should look like. Yeah. Because again, this can be very, very limiting. Like, you know, like with the quality of kindness. If I would be kind, then I would be always smiling, calm, unperturbed, soft, pleasing, not interfering, and so forth. Yes, this can be expression of kindness. Sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes an expression of kindness actually is to say no, to say stop, to say enough. Yeah. So again, to really open up, what may it mean, you know, for this kindness? Or what are the multiple ways this kindness has to be expressed, can be expressed. Because if we have so limiting views of how it should look like, we actually, again, we are blinding ourselves. We are blinding ourselves. And then we condemn easily something which doesn't fit our picture of what it looks like to be kind. Especially if we might have said no to something. Yeah. But there is a saying of a no which comes from a closed heart, no. And there is a no which can come from a very open and connected heart and still be a no. And don't think that I have sussed it out. But it's interesting territory, really interesting territory. Really, really, really wonderful, actually. But again, when I say I haven't sussed it out, also to allow ourselves, when we explore these territories, that we actually are allowed to be less than perfect. That to get it wrong sometimes, you know, to be a little bit mixed up, you know, again, what comes very often, what I hear very, very often, that we have this expectation that if we are kind and compassionate, it has to be 100% pure. You know, otherwise it's completely not right. And very often, complex being as we are, it's a mixed package. So in a situation, there might be actually a lot of compassion, and there might be also something else in it. Fear or aversion. And again, it's not about to go into the polarity of it's all good or it's all horrible because it's a mix, but to really get recognized what was skillful here, what was helpful, what wasn't. You know, we become much more differentiated. Does it make sense? Rather than having this idea, unless I'm fulfilling an image of 100% compassion, I have to discard it. We also don't actually honor the goodness that is very often in our heart, in its at times quite contradictory, multi-layered, confusing way. Yeah. And again, what we can also define part of the practice is that we learn to trust this potential, that we learn to trust this movement of these qualities like kindness and compassion. And I'm aware I'm not now really going into what the particular qualities are and feel like, but have more an overview. You know, and that we can actually learn to trust the opening of the heart, the movement of care that comes with them. That we can actually learn to trust our ability and the necessity actually to be actually deeply touched by life. Because I think actually one of the contributing factors we might find, you know, we are finding ourselves in the mess we are right now environmentally, you know, and I think it's probably fair to say it's a mess, not to be too, is, I think part of it is that we are actually lost our ability to be deeply touched by what is going on. You know, to be lost somehow, the feedback loop. Well, yes, we want to be touched. Don't want to be overwhelmed. At times we will be, but really, really important to honor the sensitivity of being impacted by life. And with the cultivation of these beautiful potentials, these beautiful qualities of the heart, you know, well-wishing, loving kindness, compassion, and so forth. What we also begin to see again and again and again, That's the very presence of these heart qualities, the very presence actually give nourishment, give a sense of grounding, of resilience, of resource. They give some strength. Actually amazing resources. Yeah. And what they also do, their presence, and they will all have different qualities, of course. You know, compassion has a slightly different quality than loving kindness. Equanimity, gratitude, generosity, they have slightly different textures. But what they all have, again, as I said before, they have an opening quality, they have a softening quality. They are always, when they are around, take already some degree of pain and suffering out of a situation. So important to see this. And initially, this is of course, you know, we have to go really against the grain, you know, because what is our intent, what is our habitual response if something is difficult, you know, what do we do? You know, I'm doing it with my hands, we're closing down. Oops. Absolutely understandable. Absolutely understandable. And actually what our experience, you know, through practice, actually what we will see that actually the more our heart is able to open instead of going oop, yeah, the more our heart opens, the more our consciousness is able to open, the less suffering there is. Does it make sense when I'm saying this? Yeah. And now not making it, oh, I have to always stay with an open heart. Sometimes we have to open our heart that our heart is not open. God, I really can't open here. It's too difficult. It's too hard. Can't do it. I'm too angry. You bring already a softening quality to the situation. There is already less suffering in it. It's even, you know, opening up to the inability to open. So the more our consciousness, our heart can open, the less suffering, not making it a should. It's just the law of consciousness. It's just like what we discover. The more our heart and mind contracts, the more such suffering, the more unsatisfactoriness, the more stress will be present. It's very counterintuitive. Because what we want to do in the face of something is difficult. And very important, you know, and again, something we will discover and need to discover and know more and more on ourselves, you know, and we can only know it in ourselves. Opening up, very important, giving space, turning towards, does not mean that we become it. You know, then we are getting sucked into the vortex of the, you know, of the story. Opening up shows more and more, you know, it's an opening up which is actually giving space around something, not to become it, yeah, very important. Sometimes we will become it, yeah, and we know it then when we become it, yeah, but it's about an opening up that actually shows again and again that we are not the content of our experience. That we don't have to define ourselves around this. Becoming means that we are defining ourselves as such. And I think this part, you know, this is all part of this beautiful dance of practice. You know, sometimes we are in it. Sometimes we can spaciously hold something what is really, really difficult. sometimes we have to run 100 miles to get away from it. You know, but we know more and more, you know, as though this may be right now the only way I can actually respond to it. Ultimately, it won't actually be the right movement. And giving us a permission that sometimes this is a movement we are able to, the only movement we are able to. But we can always revisit. We can always look after the event, you know, after we run away or close down. You know, when there is already a little bit more space, then we can revisit and can say, oh, let's see if I can hold this differently right now, if I can bring a little bit healing here. Yeah. Okay, so I think I stop here. I know that there's much more to say. Maybe one last point, which I think is also really beautiful in seeing the cultivation of these qualities in this way, is actually that it's not about making ourselves right and others wrong. You know, it's not about this, about bad and evil, good and bad. It's about actually what is my potential here? How can I open up to life that is skillful, that is honoring the pain, the joy, and also the potential here. And I think I end with a quote from the scriptures, translated by Ajahn Thanissaro, something you might know. Now, Kalamas, don't go by reports, by legends, by traditions, by scripture, by logical conjecture, by inference, by analogies, by agreement, through pondering use, by probability or by the thought, this contemplative is our teacher. When you know for yourself, these qualities are skillful, these qualities are blameless. These qualities are praised by the wise. These qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to welfare and to happiness. Then you should enter and remain in them. When I'm saying this, like really find out for yourself. No. Okay. So thank you. Thank you for your patience and your listening. So what I would like to suggest now, that there is a walking period until 4 o'clock.